This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
This Feeding Time podcast is brought to you by Plan B, your go-to joint for a quick fix of great grub and wicked coffee, a new perspective to fuss-free dining. On this week's special Feeding Time installment of Out to Lunch, I take the big group's Ben Yong out on the town around Sydney where we eat, critique the food and talk about the inspirations he gleans from his travels, which are then translated into his very distinctive restaurant concepts. It's going to be a cracker and I trust you'll enjoy this day out with us. Okay, so we're sitting here in Devon on Danks, a very trendy restaurant that I would say distills all the best of the multiculturalism that is Australia. And with me is Ben Yong from The Big Group. We've just actually been to a cafe in Surrey Hills called Cafe Rumour, which is, I think, run by a bunch of Malaysians who also own the 15 Sheets Boutique. And what we're trying to do today with Ben is to, you know, get an insight into his mind, the workings of a multi-brand restaurateur, what happens when he travels, what are the inspirations he gets, and what he takes back with him at the end of the trip. So, Ben, over to you.
Well, you know, it's good of you to spend the day with me discovering Sydney, but you know, the beauty about traveling is that sense of discovery, always constantly seeking out new things that excites the mind and the palate, you know, and I think for me, that sense of discovery is what excites me most about doing menu development. We travel to eat, and you know, so for example, this morning I know you were quite shocked with what we ordered for our first breakfast, but you know, we've got a very short limited of time when we travel, so the idea is to try as much and see as much as we can in that limited time to see what people on other parts of the world are doing. You know, in this case we're here in Sydney, and why did we go to a Malaysian restaurant in Sydney? For me, the thought process would be, you know, how would you do differently? So, for example, if you're taking Malaysian food out of Malaysia to an environment, let's say, like Sydney, you know, how would you change the flavor profile? I think, you know, as we spoke about it, what was interesting on that menu was there wasn't anything sufficiently Malaysian. It was more Thai and a little bit mixed and essentially a little bit confused, yeah? But if we've never tried it, we've never known, you know? But amongst that, there would be some discoveries of new flavors. So for example, we had that smashed avocado on toast, you know, and he had put in a whole bunch of toasted sesame that's mixed in with nori leaves and other types of flavoring. Nothing Malaysian about it. Uniquely Japanese, which was great. I think that was a great dish. I wouldn't have called it Malaysian, but that was a great dish, you know. And in my mind, I'm thinking, okay, how else can we make that dish better? You know, can we sprinkle that same seasoning over a salad, for example, to get that kind of flavor? That's how I'll be thinking. And then, you know, as we try, I'll be writing down notes about the different types of flavor profile that we can adapt to other things. So that's my idea of an eating holiday anyway.
Yeah, and it was interesting because the first place we went to, it was very minimalist. It was very small, it was very minimalist, it was very sparse, very low on the detailing. And what one of the observations we made was that it didn't really give away anything about its Asian background. So that also can possibly also chase away certain customers that might be looking for something like that. Whereas now we're at Devon and Danks, which is also still very Western in the way it's decorated, it's very industrial. But when you look at the food, you get a clear sense of the identity of the place. Yet it's quite strange how marked the contrast is between the two. What do you make of that?
I think, you know, sometimes it just depends. I mean, why do we go out to restaurants? It's for a complete experience. It's the environment we submerge ourselves in for the hour. It's the food we taste, the flavors that we remember, and that all builds towards that experience, I guess, in a nutshell. And I think sometimes when your food is strong enough, people take that away, regardless of whichever environment they're in. They've put in all their focus on creating the best profile flavors to put out on a plate, that you remember that distinctively. You know, you forget about where you are or how the environment looked, how uncomfortable that chair was, or, you know, how mediocre that service was. But that only happens when the food is uniquely strong enough and consistently strong, not just the one time. So, you know, environment versus food, it's that fine balance we always try and keep, you know. It's easy to say, hey, we want to strive and achieve perfection every single time and every single meal that we put out. But at the end of the day, a lot of it is about tweaking that balance to give the customer the best experience. So, you know, I think one of the things that, you know, we were at Ruma critiquing somebody else's restaurant is, it, trust me, the easiest thing we can do is always criticize. But at the end of the day, the thought process is, you know, you have to think through why did they do certain things the way they did. But one of the things I've learned also is in true travels, I wish we have 100% strike rate of success discoveries in every meal, but that doesn't happen. For every one amazing restaurant you find, you probably have to go through five very mediocre restaurants and probably two really extremely bad restaurants before you find that one that really hits the spot. But there in itself is a lesson, because you want to learn what mistakes they're making as well, so that you try and avoid it when you implement it in your own business. You know, it's as much about learning what not to do as it is what to do.
Yeah, definitely, that's true. Anyway, very well said. I think we should have a look at the menu and see what we're going to order here. So that this could be the one that hits a sweet spot, Ben, for all you know. So you've got a chai. That's how was that? I don't know. I stay away from chais myself. They're a little bit too new age for me, but...
Chai is only becoming rather popular recently. I first discovered chai, I still remember, as a kid, of all places. I remember the flavors so well that it's always had a very, very special place in my mind. And ever since then, I've always constantly been on a search of the perfect chai latte, so to speak. But the first place I discovered it was in the most unlikely of places, and that was in Borders Cafe in Singapore. Look, I know you're rolling your eyes, but honestly, Borders Singapore, this was when I was probably about 15 years old in Wheelock Place. That's when I had my first chai latte, and it really knocked my socks off in terms of the flavor profile. I'm a tea person more than a coffee person. So, you know, when I first had it, I thought it was this, wow, this perfect blend of flavors in my mouth swirling around. And I've always been sold on chai ever since. And unfortunately, I've always constantly gone trying to find the next perfect chai. I haven't found it yet, so you know, maybe today, maybe that lucky day, but we'll see. It doesn't look very promising right now, I have to admit.
Oh dear, well, Devon on Thanks is known for its coffee, but you never know, give it a go. Next up, Ben tells us whether the chai latte he just had met his expectations. You're currently out to lunch with me, Fei Ku, and the big group's Ben Yong in Sydney on Feeding Time at BFM 89.9. It's going to sound a little bit out there, but I'm going to make a declaration here and now. And that is that pureed side dishes can add pizzazz to any home-cooked meal, whether it's steak or spring chicken we're referring to. Now, before you scoff, hear me out. Pureed food isn't just for those with no teeth or stomach conditions. Done well, they will be great dance companions for protein, adding diverse flavor elements and creaminess to a dish that would otherwise just be a big chew. At Baka, the char-grilled ribeye steak is paired with a deliriously good burnt onion puree that really comprises just onions sautéed until they're golden brown, then simmered with water till soft before being blended with butter and cooking cream. When you're cooking at home, let your imagination run wild when embarking on your puree adventure. What about a sweet potato puree with caramelized onions for your next spring chicken? Or an apple, celery and turnip puree to accompany your roast pork? Or even perking up your standard Sunday roast beef with a cauliflower and leek puree? The key here is to experiment and see which combinations work best. And soon, you'll be known as the maestro of creating imaginative sides. Remember to season your puree well with the best sea salt and cracked black pepper you can afford. And also consider adding cream, truffle oil, vinegar, and good quality butter to your puree. When serving your puree, rather than just scooping it onto the plate next to your meat, try caneling, smearing, or even piping your puree to add a touch of luxe to your meal. Or go to Baka and get inspired by the real thing. Baka is located at 11B for Bangkok, Lorong Kurau in Taman Weng Lok at Bangsa. The phone number there is 03-2280-0073, and they open daily for lunch and dinner and closed on Mondays. Awesome new food like the Malaysian corned beef rendang waffle witch and Christie's crunchy kale salad at Plan B, your new local. You'll definitely not find these anywhere else. Feeding Time, I'm Fei Ku, and we're currently out to lunch with the big group's Ben Yong in sunny Sydney, where we're on a restaurant trail. Up next, More insights into the things that inspires Ben when he's traveling. So Ben, how was that chai latte? Was it the stuff that dreams are made of?
Unfortunately, didn't quite hit the mark. It was a little bit too milky and not quite strong enough, I think, in terms of the leaves and the spices. But, you know, the search continues.
We've ordered some amazing food. I mean, like, we've got in front of us right now the truffle sauce serve with hot chips, you know, and grated fresh truffles. It's an exercise in excessiveness. I mean, it's basically McDonald's soft serve with fries, super luxed out, right? I mean, how good was that?
That really hit the spot, I think. You know, it's such a simple novelty that they've exemplified quite well. But you're absolutely right. I mean, I remember growing up ordering the chocolate sundae from McDonald's and then a packet of fries, and you just dunk it in there, and it's this combination of hot and cold, sweet and salty, very much what we've had today, but definitely a super luxe version of that childhood memory. And you know, I think the other dish that really hit the spot, I thought, was the roasted king salmon with a potato noodle with a little bit of a miso butter sauce. And I think we've both learned, well, I have anyway, this new fancy word, you know, furikake, which is a Japanese version of MSG and nori leaves and toasted sesame seed. And that really was a very good dish. Very, I don't know, heartwarming, I think. That's what I'll use the description of. And that salmon was really cooked to perfection. Crispy skin, pink in the center. That's what every piece of good fish should be anyway. I enjoyed that. You know, what was your favorite?
Yeah, I think, you know, I mean, fries and ice cream and truffles are all well and good. But yeah, definitely the standout dish was the salmon, because it was complex, but it was familiar. Like you said, there were so many elements of it that's familiar to you that it harks back to a certain aspect of your life or your childhood that you remember. So something from the simplicity of the crispy skin fish to the miso butter, which, you know, we've all had so much of. Furikake just immediately transports me back to Tokyo when I was eating it by the spoonfuls when I first discovered it. So definitely, yeah. And when you sit at a restaurant like this, which is really quite inspiring because it seems effortless.
Yeah.
They seem to have done this quite effortlessly, and it's not too contrived. And yet the food is really, well, definitely way above average. Way, way, way above average. And I'm sure you're going to get some elements that you're going to say, okay, I'm going to think about this, and how am I going to take it the next step and do it my way?
I mean, I think, you know, the one thing that I'll take from today's menu is that the confidence they have in the menu is such a small menu. You know, I mean, you really have to be very confident of your menu when you have How many items?
I think a dozen items,
right? Less than a dozen items. I mean, you're talking about when you have a small menu, everything needs to be a hit. And that's something I've taken from today's testing, you know, that sheer confidence. And there is so much simplicity in the food. I mean, when you read the menu, you know, initially my first thought was, is this going to be a very scary menu? Because there's a lot of words, a lot of big words. But, you know, it's just so well executed in its simplicity that, you know, and I can now understand the confidence from that. And, you know, it helps me kind of think, you know, reflect back and look at some of our menus, which perhaps is just a little bit too big, you know, where we may end up being a jack of all trades and master of none. You know, here in this case, they're a master of 12 specific dishes that has just hit the sweet spot for those that we've tried anyway. So, yeah, I think trying to apply back to the principle of some of the things that we do, you know, we are in the midst of reviewing some of our recipes and menu, where we would like to shrink it down a little bit so that we can start specializing, being the master of our dishes, you know, take ownership of that, and instead of offering everything under the sun, just be very, very specific at to be a specialist in the various brands of what we do. You know, I mean, we already practice that in some of our existing brands. So for example, with Baka, you know, it's a barbecue specialty store. It's a relatively small menu, still bigger than the 12, but you know, we do specialize in barbecue food, so everything has some element of char to get that smoky flavor in. So that is that one USP, you know. So we I think a lot of that will be now looking and applying it to say something like Plan B and trying to refocus back. What is it? What is our specialty? What is it that we're best at? And then how are we going to be able to exemplify that specialty to bring consistency in the delivery of that food to a chain cafe rather than just being a one-hit wonder, you know, with consistency issues. So that's probably what I'll take from today.
Well, I would say that's as valuable a lesson as any, because curiosity guiding me here, but when you first started, did you think it was because you felt the need to provide your diners with a lot of choice? Was that what informed you when you created such a big menu? Or do you think times have changed?
I think it's definitely something that you know, I think times definitely have changed. When we first started out many years ago, the trend back there was to have a bit of everything for everyone. And over time, what we've discovered is that people are seeking out the best of the best, you know? So for example, if you think as a consumer, you start thinking, what do I feel like having for lunch or dinner? And if you think chicken rice, your mind is going to start sorting out by where's got the best chicken rice, and you're going to go there rather than, maybe I'll just go somewhere and they have a little bit of everything and then I'll pick something there. So I think people's behavioral patterns have changed significantly. People are seeking out the best of the best in anything that they're looking for, whether it's an atelier, whether it's a meal. I think, yeah, there's definitely been a behavioral change, and I think we are beginning to have to adapt to that to really be the best in what we do.
Yeah, I think we've really seen that in recent years, that whole artisanal movement, small batch, handmade, locally sourced, seasonally driven. I'm sure you see all that at your supermarket all the time, right? Even in buying butter, we want to buy the best for, you know, this and the best salt for that. And that, I guess, has also informed the consumer perception of driving to a speciality versus someone who does something across the board and, well, what's the focus then? So that's an interesting, I think that's a very interesting next stage for you in terms of your restaurants, because when you started out, you know, you were like the concept king. You were just blowing out concepts of the water, and I think there was a lot of bandwagon jumping, people following, you know, in your footsteps because you paved the way for them. And now again, I guess the important thing and the imperative thing, not for vanity's sake or any of that other reason, but purely for your own evolution, is to then take that next crucial step forward and again, I guess, for better or for worse, push that way forward as well for the others.
I think, you know, as you were talking, it's something crossed my mind, and I think it's really, for me, very easy to come up with a concept. What I'm learning is building the content to that concept that's a little bit more challenging, you know, developing over time. And I think it comes back down to creating substance. You know, there's no point having an empty shell that looks great and feels great, but there isn't enough substance. And what we're doing currently is revisiting that substance in terms of offering. What can we offer to our customers that equals to that brand promise that the concept says they will do? You know, I think we were talking earlier on about produce, and a lot of that is that, you know, how do we start applying our principle of produce with integrity, knowing where it's sourced, where it comes from, and how good it stands on its own two legs? How do we implement that into a menu to a value proposition as well? Because, you know, there's no point saying that, hey, I'm going to use the best of the best of the best ingredients from around the world, and it comes out to be $100 for a set of poached eggs. That's just not feasible business. So the question is always finding that balance between a value proposition. And I think the word that I like that I just picked up is creating substance as well, that substantiates the value proposition. And I think, as what we said earlier on, it starts by looking at a smaller menu, making sure that we are the master of those things that we put up, rather than just putting in things for the sake of putting in things because it looks pretty. So I think that's that fundamental change that we're looking at within the big group.
So pit stop number 3, we're at the Harris Farm supermarket in Drummoyne, where I insisted that Ben come and take a look because it's very similar in terms of concept to his own supermarket in Kuala Lumpur, which has store-in-store, restaurants in-store, specialty stands, beautifully designed, beautifully laid out produce. Having now seen it, what are your thoughts?
You know, it's a really impressive sight, you know, and I think like all supermarket operators, everybody is trying to look out within their own scope of what they're familiar with, and it's about trying to reconcile with a concept that is a little bit more forward thinking of an integral experience when you're shopping. So I think, you know, this place, they've done a great job. I mean, it's definitely a very different Harris market that I've seen in the other locations, you know. I mean, it's great. It feels very similar to home, right? We're sitting at the oyster bar having a chat, picking up some oysters, but yet sitting really mainly within the supermarket. So, you know, I have to say, thanks for the recommendation. It's a great day out here.
Yeah, my pleasure. And what they've tried to do here as well, despite the fact that their supermarket is, they go to the farmers at 2 a.m., they pick up the produce, they're in the store by 6 a.m. and on the shelves. So again, the emphasis on freshness, on local. Has that been something that you've been able to achieve with your own place?
Yeah, I think it's, you know, for us at Ben's Independent Grocer, it's definitely a work in progress. You know, we've been, over the years, since from the time we started, we've been developing relationships with farmers out of Cameron Highlands and, you know, even as close as, say, somewhere in Jundabyak, where we work with them in terms of produce that we're looking for that's unique to the market, number one. Then number two, it's also just building better produce. Well, I use the word building, but farming better produce, you know, making sure that there is as little or if not no pesticides. That's why the organic market is an interesting market, you know, it's growing. I mean, but the confinement of organic, it's very grey. There are all these rules and regulations that I don't think Malaysia, we're really up to standards in terms of compliance. So what is it that we ultimately strive for? We want better produce, you know, sweeter, more natural. Natural is the key word here in flavors. And of course, as little, if not none, in any chemicals of sorts. So I think that's the thing that we've been working with our local growers in trying to develop better selection and definitely fruits and vegetables that are better in quality.
So in terms of looking around at the produce and looking around the aisles and the design and everything else, do you think there's something here you can take away?
I think with any store visit, in any market visit, that, you know, you always learn something. It could be, I'm looking at the floor finish here, and it's they've done away with the traditional wooden vinyl floor. It's still a very warm feel, but they've used in concrete tiles that looks like wooden floor strips, which helps warm up the whole area. So, you know, that was the first thing I noticed when we came in here. Lighting, I'm looking around and, you know, there's been a very good balanced use of light. Selection wise, you know, I think it's still a case of going down through aisle by aisle to see what's out there and what's available in terms of the mix and price point. So, you know, I think there's definitely things to learn from this store visit.
And if we were to be a little less modest, what do you think you could teach them?
What do you, I think? I don't really know. I mean, you know, I've always admitted that we went into the supermarket business completely inexperienced. We're still a work in progress, you know, trying to understand what our customers want and how can we better serve them. I think it may be a little bit premature or too cocky for me to say, hey, I can teach you a thing or two. I don't think we're there yet. But, you know, it's hard to say. I honestly always look at it from a perspective of, what can I learn from all these different experiences of visiting the stores, looking at what other people are doing and how they're doing, how they merchandise products. Price points is something that we're also always very observant of, you know, in terms of what appeals to a mass market, or rather the demographics they're targeting to. So yeah, hard to say for the time being what we can teach. I mean, I could share a couple of recipes for their cafes, but that's about it.
Yeah. But yeah, it's got to be said, they've done a really good job here. We're sitting at the seafood counter, hence all the noise, because the staff are constantly ladling, shoveling ice over the seafood to keep it fresh. There's amazing whole fish, and it's pretty similar, I think, in terms of sensibility and aesthetic appeal to yours. Although, maybe arguably yours has got a little more quirk, you know, a little bit more quirky aesthetic to it. And this one feels a little bit more, still has a very supermarket dynamic.
I think, you know, the other thing to really take note of is at the end of the day, we're still in Australia where it's a Western predominant audience. So, you know, the types of offering here is still very catered towards a typical Australian household. Whereas I think in Malaysia, where we have a predominant Asian audience, you know, produce type of ingredients that people are used or familiar with using and seek is very different. So I think that will be your fundamental difference between the two stores. But, you know, having said that, the Asian produce market segment is growing. I'm beginning to see a lot of Asian produce stores popping up, you know, that's just focusing on product mix. But let alone, forget about the independents, but even mainstream stores. I remember when I was a student here, there was probably like one tiny little rack of what they consider Asian produce, and it would be filled 80% with what they call Maggi noodles here, and soy sauce, you know, and I think a chili sauce would be as adventurous as they'll go with in terms of Asian produce. But today, if you walk down the aisle of World Foods, they call them World Foods, it's fancier than calling it Asian produce, you literally have as much as a complete aisle dedicated to the offerings that's available. I mean, you know, you can find simple things, the basic staples like gula melaka to an extent here. So it's still, it's definitely growing, I think. You still can find the basic Asian produce here, say in Australia. But that's, I think, essentially the fundamental difference between the two stores. I think design-wise, it's subjective, you know, to each their own. Every store is a little bit different, different character, different experience. But yeah, I think, you know, it would definitely, I think all supermarkets outside is a work in progress, and this is no different from us.
That's definitely the case. So we visited Cafe Ruma, we visited Devon on Dangs, and now we're at Harris Farm on the Victoria Road. I guess you've taken away quite a bit. You've had a little bit to say about it, and that's been a really good snapshot into the mind of, you know, what makes you tick and what makes Ben tick and what informs the restaurants that you do. What do you think the most salient thing from today has been?
I think it would be what I'm taking away today is there's definitely a lot more focus back on produce, the integrity of ingredients, as we were talking about early on, and letting those ingredients shine. And in order to do that, so some of the restaurants is that they've really kept to smaller menus. I think the word is so that it's not overcrowding the space where people has a chance to try new things, whether it's something as basic as beetroot as you were drinking today, to say today onsen eggs. I saw that feature very prominently in both the restaurants we went to, and you know, I think 6 months ago when I was down in Sydney, I've never seen the word onsen eggs anywhere. So I think that's partially trend, but the fact I guess I'm trying to say is that smaller menus allows a bigger platform for people to try new things, to focus on things that matter, rather than in an overcrowded menu where, you know, people get lost. And that's the fundamental difference. When people get lost, they go back to the tried and tested, what they're used to, like spaghetti bolognese. So I would say that's definitely something that's painfully obvious to me right now.
Okay, well, I guess we can expect to see very, very strictly curated menus at big restaurants from here on in, hopefully. I hope you've had a good time today. Have a good, safe trip back to Malaysia. Thank you, Ben.
Thank you very much. It was a great day indeed.
Huge thanks to Ben for going out to lunch with me in Sydney and being very sporting and sharing his insights. If you want to find out what we're giving away this week on Feeding Time, don't forget to follow us on Facebook. That's facebook.com/BFM Feeding Time. Or follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Miss Koo, that's MISSKHOO, for more information about the show. Till next Saturday, this has been Feeding Time with Faye on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.